sometimes you have to be, I'd say, a walking reality check. This is how I qualify myself sometimes.
Design starts at a smart contract level, which just reinforces what you said, which is the importance of having thoughtful, smart design.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of Can I Have It in Blue, a podcast about design, technology, product, and everything in between. I'm Filipa, a product designer at Savvisual, and together with me, I've got my co-hosts, João and Joana, both product designers at Savvisual.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
And for this second episode, we've got some special guests, Margarida Mendes da Maia.
Hi, everyone.
And Álvaro Bezerra.
Hello.
Welcome. They are both product managers at Savvisual and are here just to talk about product and whatever they feel like talking today, really. How are you feeling, Margarida? Are you excited to be here?
I'm excited to be here. A bit nervous, but excited, yes.
Oh, why?
First time on a podcast. That's probably why.
It's going to be great. Actually, it's the best podcast to have your premiere because it's the best podcast in the world.
It is probably the best, but as a product manager, unscripted things scare me.
What about you, Álvaro? Are you excited to be here?
Yeah, I am, Filipa. I like doing podcasts. I like doing products. And I like everyone here, so perfect combination. Yeah, I think the title is really spot on. It's something that is very, very much talked about, but very rarely brought to light, which is this collaboration between PMs and designers, right?
Do you like designers, Álvaro? That's the main question here.
<Of course. laughs> If I see a project or a frog where I'm going to be in without a designer, I automatically, like, I'm scared.
That's a good answer. Do you want to quickly introduce yourselves so that people that are listening to us can know a little bit of your background?
Yeah, going back, I'm Álvaro Bezerra, Portuguese, roughly 13 years old. And yeah, I was born and raised in Braga, where I currently live. My background is a roller coaster. At the LDR, I entered college to international degree business, which I didn't like. I basically spent a lot of time in student associations. I then shifted to psychology. I lived 1 year in Spain doing Erasmus. When I came back, I was tired of studying. So I started working at a call center for 1 year. After that, I changed to a car parts warehouse, fulfilling orders. And then that's when I decided to go back to studying. I finished my psychology degree. I did like 1 year and a half in 1 year. And at the end, I applied to summer camp at Savvisual, and without an idea of what product management was, literally, as in the first time I searched for what was a product manager and a product manager role was when I applied to summer camp. And well, after a summer camp, an apprenticeship and an internship, I'm here, a product manager at Savvisual and loving it every day. So yeah, that's basically my story.
That's such a rich background.
Yeah, well, it was expensive, I'll tell you that.
Well, I imagine. What about you, Margarida?
Hi, I'm Margarida. I'm 30 years old this year, which is scary. And I've been a product manager for 7 years now. Even though my background is kind of a roller coaster as well, like Álvaro, and I feel a lot of product managers, actually. It's something we have in common. There's really no degree for this.
Agreed, yeah.
And a lot of it is people skills. So I went to, my background is in law. I went to law school and I absolutely detested law. There was something about it that stifled all my curiosity, all my creativity. And so in the middle of law school, I was doing everything that was completely unrelated to law. And this allowed me to get into an internship at an investment bank that had a venture capital arm, which was Banque d'Investissement Global. And I ended up working in this intersection between innovation in banking law and startup and doing product in startups. So at the time, PSD2 had just come out, the Payment Services Directive. The market was insane. No one knew what to do or what was supposed to happen. And that's exactly when I got in. I ended up staying in the bank and working all throughout college because I didn't want to go back to just studying. I felt like I'm in the real world now. I'm doing real things. That's where the journey started. It was kind of an intersection between law and product that then just shifted naturally towards doing just product. And then I ended up moving to consumer first bank because I really wanted to have some retail experience and be very focused on individual consumers' experience. And then I got tired of not innovating at all. So here's to me joining Subvisual and this insane group of people. They keep challenging me to these crazy things every day. And here's to me learning about Web3. This is it.
Great. And what do you think would be your favorite part about product in general?
Oh, I'd say I love it because I think that you have to be something that really, really resonates with me, which is a generalist. You need to have a lot of different skills and you need to apply them every day into everything. So you need to have some business savviness and you need to understand financial goals for companies and how to integrate that in a product. You also need to understand the importance that consumer wants and needs have. You also need to work with a lot of different cross-functional team members. So you need to be able to manage different stakeholders that work very differently, have very different expectations. And also ultimately, if you're in consulting like we are right now, you have to manage clients as well and their expectations. So I feel that it's just this mix that allows me to be a different person every day. And I really enjoy that. It allows me to be creative and grow in very different ways. What about you, Alvaro?
I was actually thinking of my answer. And well, ironically, I think it's the same. As in, I've heard a lot of product managers give this the same answer, which is the fact that it's different every day, right? So I find it ironic that we all say that's the same thing, that we all say the same thing, that is, it's different every day, right? Well, logically, it would be everyone would say something different. But I think that's exactly it. I don't know what I will face every day. And that's scary. That's hard, but that's awesome. I mean, if I'm going to do something 8 hours a day, I might as well take a challenge at it. And there's a concept that, which is context shifting. Everyone should be aware, which is changing the context. Your context does takes a toll on your mental energy. But I do love it, as in I get drained if I'm always in the same thing. It starts to get very draining for me. I'm not saying that context shifting is not. It's also draining, but I do enjoy it sometimes to vary and to think differently. So yeah, I agree with Margarita. What what I love about the product, it's always different. It's always about the journey.
Taking from one of the points you mentioned there, like the context shifting point, don't you think that sometimes you feel the need to go a little bit more in depth on a certain point, and then you don't have, you know, opportunity or time to go more in depth because obviously you need to be constantly changing our products or even subjects. Have you ever felt that the wish to continue pursuing that and then you couldn't because of, you know, something happened?
In micro situations, yeah, 100%. But I have the option, if I can choose, right? Sometimes I have to choose what I don't really want, but that's okay, because most of the times I get to choose what's important, what's a priority. So yeah, it balances out.
I'd say it depends on the context you're in. So I'd say that if you are working at a startup and you're doing product and you're always working on the same shared vision, right? You're always evolving the same main core product, then I'd say that you have enough or probably more time to really go deep on understanding like how this very small feature is going to make a difference in the experience of everyone that's using your product and how key it can become in the future, and guarantee that you dedicate enough time to that. I'd say that in consulting, the big differential is, even if we do believe that we should spend enough time researching this specific key point, the client might just not be interested in it. Or we are just working on this very small subsection of the product at that time. And even though we have incredible ideas for something else, that's not our goal. So I'd say that, yes, it's very easy to feel frustrated because you don't get to explore to a point whether you'd say, oh, this is a good idea or this is a bad idea. Also because it consumes a lot of resources, right? So sometimes finding if an idea is good means bringing in IT so we could know if it's possible to be done. It means bringing in people for user interviews. And this means we need to find the right targets. We need to contact them. We need to try new things. We need to do research. We need to bring in designers to understand if. So just a small thing that we might want to explore could be like 3 weeks of our lives lost in specifically that.
That's
so
not true.
Yeah, I don't know if you three as designers kind of feel the same frustration with this or not, and wanting to explore different sides of how to build a product in terms of UX and UI and having people try it out.
Yeah, for sure. I also have a question for you guys, but to answer you, yeah, like there's a lot of times in projects where you know that you do have to do more research and you know that it is important. And every book out there tells you that and explains the process and tells you that you should do it. However, in the real world, sometimes that's really hard to do because of several things, but mainly because sometimes clients don't see the value in it. And this is something that you sometimes need to struggle a bit to explain and to show. And yeah, sometimes you don't have time. So there's a bunch of variants there that make you not be able to do this kind of research. And you can, sometimes I felt that like you go blind, you know, like you need to test things out and you are blind because you didn't do the research before yet. So yeah, we struggle with that a lot as well.
Yeah, as well as being, Joana also has a question she mentioned, but I was going to add to that what you said and bridge it to a question, which is one of our main struggles. I'd say two parts. So one of them is what Joana said, is like it's hard to educate people on why research matters, why it's not, it's an investment and not the money spent just because of spending money. It's you actually gain from that, but selling that is hard. And the other part, which is what I was going to make into a question, is it's harder, I guess, when you're a small team. So we usually work in pairs, right? So you have a PM and a designer in a project, and they are handling all of it. So they handle what the PM and the designer handle usually, and then they handle the research part. And how has that been for you working on pairs, doing a bunch of stuff that's it comprises both roles in some shape or form, but how does that work? How do you collaborate, or how we collaborate? But I'm passing you the ball to answer to do this, because we usually are two people doing a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, just to add to that, because my question was exactly related to this, was how do you usually interact with designers? We are on the same team, but actually I haven't worked with you until now. But I would like to know, like, your opinion on that. How do you see the responsibilities when it comes to research? How do you feel like, what are the differences between a PM role and a designer role? And how do you interact with each other in these duos, like John mentioned?
Alvaro, do you want to go first, or?
Yeah, I was mulling. I find it very interesting and hard to answer, because it's very similar. I know that at some point there's a distinct difference, but up until then, it's really similar. Like, we work really hand in hand. What I was mulling is that I still think that not as much, definitely not as much as engineers, but designers still need that energy and that time to go deep on problems, as we were discussing. And that means that that requires focus and sometimes thinking micro or going deep on a problem. And the PM is always the fallback of keeping all the problems in perspective of the product, allowing everyone on the team to focus on the problem that they can tackle. So at least that's the way I see it. It's a big help is always keeping the big problems in mind, so that when we are discussing a solution very specifically, when everyone green lights it, the PM quickly can think of how it will affect the entirety of the product. Of course, I'm describing it very black and white, but it's not always like that. But I think that's one of the things I try to bring as a PM.
I'd say that in my point of view, so tackling like the first question that João asked, and then I'll get to yours, Joanna. So in the case of a two people team, which is how we usually work at Subvisual, and it's funny because I'm here with three designers and I've only worked with one of them. I'm just going to start working with João now, but I've only worked with Filipa. No chance to work with Joanna yet. And I'd say that it's harsh being a two person team in this. Mostly because I used to work in a traditional setting, right? So I used to work in a team where I was the only product manager, but we had a lot of people with product management skills that didn't exactly do the same as I did, but helped a lot shape research, shape strategy, shape a lot of different things as well. Different components of it, including vision. And then we'd communicate with designers, and there were a team of three designers as well. So then they were always working in tandem with each other as well. So it was a bigger team, and everything, even though the product manager had to guarantee that we had a shared vision around the product ideas, that we could translate our user requirements into features, and that we'd work effectively as a cross-functional team, including managing this relationship with tech, the work used to be distributed, and everything worked as well in the larger time frame. So now I see myself working in a team with Filipa, and we have 2 weeks or 3 weeks to create a vision, think about a product, reach a roadmap, and do any type of user interviews and process that information and give it to the client. And it's very extreme, and it feels like we miss a lot of steps or we overwork. There's two options in this, right? And it's harder to manage, and it's harder to manage the way I would perfectly like to collaborate. So now moving to Joanna's question, which is something that I like doing constantly, is like we're all in the same meetings. So some people choose to have meetings with the client and then have meetings with the designer or share information differently. I feel that it's very, very important that we have a complete alignment and two also very different interpretations of what the client said, and we meet in the middle. So every time we hear a client speak about what the product is, what the vision is, what the users might want, everything else is being interpreted from my side, where I'm probably thinking about features or how that would translate strategically, how that would translate to an eventual roadmap for go-to-market. And then Filipa, for instance, is thinking, okay, how do I make this, all of these features usable, easy to access, easy to comprehend. So someone that I've never met and that I don't totally comprehend can use them as simply as I could when there's this very big disparaging and disparagement of information. So I think that that collaboration is absolutely essential in the way I view things. Even though I'm very like I've always been a big fan of UX, so sometimes I can meddle a bit in Filipa's work. I'm sorry. But I absolutely love it, and I love user testing, and I love going through all of these processes that include understanding how UI and UX mix into the product vision. I sometimes can be a bit annoying about really wanting to participate and see the designer's insight into that. But it's mostly curiosity, I'd say, and love for design as well, something that I can't do. How do you
Actually, on
guys?
that point, oh, sorry, Margarita. I was gonna ask you on that point if you think it could be beneficial for designers to have a little bit of understanding of your role as a product manager and to, to just learn the basics of what product management is in order to improve the collaboration between PMs and designers. What are your opinions on that?
I'd say that something that's very, very important is that whichever topic we're working on, so imagine that we're creating this marketplace for NFTs, or we're creating a yield farming system. So I'd say that being aligned in the level of knowledge that we have around the topic and how we envision it happening is really important. And then I'd say that the best way, and what I feel is more important for designers to have to be able to work with us, and the other way around as well, is just find an efficient and clear mode of communication. So we use different terminology sometimes. We use different, I'd say that we have key metrics, different key metrics and perspective. We want to sometimes we have a misalignment in goals, and I think that effectively communicating with each other and the designer understanding that sometimes we have to manage the client that is also asking for something that the designer doesn't agree with. I probably don't agree with, but it's still what we have to do. And I feel everyone on our team is very, very aware of that. I've never felt that there was a disconnection between designers and PMs in that sense. I don't know if you share my perspective, Robert.
Well, I was gonna say that I'm spoiled, because I luckily only worked with very knowledgeable product people, that always keep product in mind and they understand the pains of a product manager. So it's hard for me to, it's like the third time I said it's a hard question. This one is actually easy because I'm spoiled. I can't have a very set opinion besides a very generic one, which is everything in product is related, right? So knowing a little bit about everything is always beneficial. But on the other hand, I wouldn't know how to work with a designer that wouldn't understand the problem we are facing, like Margarida described. It would be very, very weird for me, because it's so natural, it makes so much sense that everyone in the team, in the product team, understands a little bit about tackling the problem, right? So I would say it is always important, at least a little bit.
I think to add to this, I think one key aspect of why there's no disconnection or you guys don't feel any disconnection is up until Alvaro came in, there was no product manager in Subvisual. We simply did that ourselves. We felt that pain, but we also enjoyed the challenge. So in between us, we would share that role in a team. Usually the ones with more experience or more, you know, into it would take kind of that role, and there wouldn't be like a natural selection. It would be kind of middling, like maybe I'll do this and maybe I'll do that and maybe I'll prepare a session for this, like we are struggling with this. So I think in some aspects it was like a training that was happening because we had no PM, so we had to do it ourselves, and kind of that's what led to bringing in PMs, is like we need this, we need this role, and we need this person that does this, that helps us do this. So I think that's kind of why it's an easy discussion, I guess, between everyone in the team, because we are all very aware of what it means to do that, even though we haven't done it like full time, but we were doing it while we were doing everything else, right? And we always had that love, and even developers, and they are not in this call, but most people in Subvisual has that instinct, I would say. I was gonna add, or maybe shift actually a bit, just because I feel like in particularly in Web3 projects, and I think if I'm not mistaken, you've only worked in Web3, maybe, no, Alvaro has worked in a project with me that was not Web3 a long time ago, but the consulting part, because Marguerite was saying, like, as consultants we step in, and then she said thinking about the product and coming up with ideas for products and stuff, because, and that might, for the people who are listening, might be thinking it's odd that you are doing we are doing consultancy work, but we are planning and designing roadmap and coming up with features, let's simplify, to products. And that's one of the aspects that I feel Web3 brought to the conversation for us, is like most projects come in very blurry still, with many grand ideas, but no real sense of what an MVP would be or a V1 would be. How is that for you? Like, you are not stepping in to a project which has a clear vision, clear goals, and you're just like, okay, let's get everyone organized, get the processes in place, and then we'll cover this chunk of work and we'll get this done. This is a bit of a different space where we are in, where we come in and we literally become a part of the team, of the creative vision team. How does that, how do you guys see that, and where do you think we add the value, and how do we manage to do that being a consultancy team most of the time?
Having a little bit of both of the experiences, as in a more consultancy product in the sense of it, and one as you described it, I think to have a great product, you have to have a great way to build it, right? And building, air quotes, the machine needed to build that product has to be its own machine, as in to have a team with its own processes, its own way of thinking. It will tackle its own problems. And for that, a framework is needed, a way of reaching the final goal, which is to build a usable, great product. And sometimes, yeah, we have people that need help in building that machine, that need our experience in getting products to market, in doing user research, in understanding discovery, delivery, even a deployment process, as in from having public code ready to actually having it public, it's a process. It needs to have tests, it needs to be reviewed. So all of that, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of knowledge that is beyond developing literally a product.
Yeah, I agree. Like, for me, I have to say that one of the greatest pleasures for me is to just have founders come to us and they have this incredible idea. Sometimes they don't even know if it's possible to implement it the way they want to implement it. Sometimes they don't know if people would use it. Sometimes they don't know if it's that beneficial or not. They have no idea what a go-to-market strategy would be for an MVP. They are somewhat lost in these details that Alvaro was mentioning, all these processes that you have to go through to reach what is a working MVP and a roadmap for the future. And I'd have to say that there are definitely two things that come to mind, like instantly. And they came to mind the moment João asked the question. So one of the biggest difficulties is we are brought on almost as part of the team. That's true. It's like we get completely integrated and consumed with a certain project, and that becomes our startup as well. So we get very emotionally invested in it because we're in the beginning, right? There's so much space for creation, for creativity, for thinking about strategy, vision, marketing. Everything is open, and that's such an excitement, right? The power to create something. And then there's always this tension that comes, which is when you realize two things. First, you have to deal with understanding how much decision power you have within the team that you're inserted in. So obviously, they're the founders, they have the vision, they're going to be the future of the company, they're going to be hiring their own people, we're going to have to go through a process of handoff. But at that moment, how dependent and how open are they to listening to your process and what you usually do with other clients and what your experience tells them they should do? It's a very hard process to sell. João has mentioned this already. Even product discovery is usually very hard to sell. The idea that we need to go through a million different processes that look absolutely incircumstantial, but they aren't. So this is hard to grasp. It's sometimes you have to be, I'd say, a walking reality check. This is how I qualify myself sometimes, as a walking reality check, which is you just have to be very, very clear and tell your clients, obviously respectfully, and giving them different options and explaining why you feel that this is this way, and in a substantiated manner. Obviously, you need to have information to provide them as to why it would be a better or worse idea. But sometimes you just have to say, this doesn't make sense. Sometimes you have to say, we don't know at all if this makes sense. And do you really want to spend this amount of money and resources building something that you don't know if people want? Yeah, so these two points are critical in the way we interact, and they're two of our biggest pain points, I feel. Yeah, but they're also very exciting to deal with.
For the cover of these podcasts, we send prompts to Midjourney and come up with an image. And I think walking reality check is the prompt for this episode. So Philippa, take note.
I actually was going to say that a walking reality check is like on point, really. I feel like I do that a lot.
The thing for me is like we are a team that's really focused and that has learned over 10 years, more than 10 years, to be really good at going from zero to one. What I mean by that is like zero is like I have an idea and one is like it's online, right? It's doing something. It's not one, zero to 10. It's not zero to doing everything in the universe. It's like zero to one. And the one, traditionally we called it MVP, then that's a very... It's a hard term because everyone has their own understanding of what an MVP is, but let's say zero to one. It's very hard these days. It feels to me, at least, that the vision of what's the one, what's the launch moment is harder and harder to perceive for a founder, particularly Web3 projects. That's what I feel. Like I feel most of the projects come in, you know, they want to do everything. And it's like, it's very exciting because it's like, oh, well, yeah, if we had this whole ecosystem, this would be great. But then you ask, so what's the minimal version of this? How do you want to start? That's a very difficult conversation. And I was wondering, well, I kind of would have my own answer to this, but how do you try to work this out with the founder? How do you try to come up with, how do we help the founders get to this one vision, the zero to one vision? How do you explain to them or work with them to understand, okay, all these things are really cool, but they come later. For now, this is where we're gonna start, and this is where we're gonna call it a launch time for the product.
I think that you guys are essential in Web3 for this, to be honest. I think more in Web3 than in any other industry, the way that you create an experience that allows for a good onboarding, that allows for people to have a smooth first experience where they don't feel confused with having to have one wallet or two wallets and now a different wallet and now just to access this, I don't know, trying to get this free NFT, or that then you have to connect somewhere else to get access to a token gated community. And then, so I think that this process in Web3, it's essential to go through it with a designer to design an MVP, because I feel that onboarding is more essential than ever. I'd say that from zero to one, the one needs to be seamless. And the only way to do it is to make sure that both the designers and the product manager are able to rationally explain to founders that what is important is that Web3 does not feel like Web3. It's that Web3 feels like the internet, and that the one needs to be seamless right away, even if we have to forego features that are immediately interesting. And another thing is the one needs to be tested. We should also do all types of UI testing and UX testing and everything, user interviews included. But I'd say that we need to guarantee that the one is at a point where it is 100% stable tech-wise. So it's this combination of three criteria, which is we have enough features to launch and for this to make sense. We have, and to be a product, we have an absolutely seamless onboarding that makes it very clear to the consumer what they need to do and how to interact. And then the third point, which is it should be bulletproof by then. So you shouldn't be worrying if, oh, maybe we didn't test enough and someone might lose a million in an NFT transaction. So yeah, everything needs to be very, very seamless. This is what I feel in Web3 as a first experience. And you guys are absolutely key to that in my perspective.
Yeah, I agree, Marie. I think I was just recalling a conversation we usually have, which is that design starts at the smart contract level, which just reinforces what you said, which is the importance of having thoughtful, smart design facing the user, right? Because it will trickle down to the smart contract level, which are immutable. Well, most are. I really liked John's question because at first it took me to different memory than that it doesn't involve literally taking a product zero to one, but to the fact that there's different meanings to the one, to launching. I just recently I was discussing feasibility, as in doing measurements with a developer, and I asked them, okay, so when will it be ready to launch? Typical product manager question, right? Is a smart contract developer a really good one, and he told me 2 weeks, and I was like, whoa, only 2 weeks for it to be to the user, for them to be able to do everything with it. And it was like, oh no, 2 weeks to be on the mainnet. So it's that different semantics of, but we were both thinking about launching. It was about launching his work, which are the smart contracts. And I was about when I was thinking about launching the feature that the smart contracts will bring to the users. And yeah, sometimes things do get lost in translation, and it can happen with developers, with anyone in the team, right? And it's all about understanding that the vision that is brought is translated well enough to everyone on the team so that all their decisions are the same. Well, it's very simply explained, very hard to do, right? Because the example I just gave, people assume different things from different words. And yeah, I think a lot of our work is actually translating needs, translating pains into either, well, into either words or visuals or flows or experiences. So yeah, I think what we do with great expertise is exactly that, picking up a very complex one multiplied by 1,000 and understand, okay, before you do all of these multiplications and divisions and subtractions to your one, let's have a one first. Right, because with zero, there's nothing you can divide, subtract, or multiply. Right, so yeah, figuring out what is the one is a hard job, but it's a really cool one.
Do you feel that in Web3, your role is still seen as, so design is still seen as something that comes second? Or do you feel that the scenario is changing?
I think that actually Web3 is bringing more attention to the design role in the product because actually my own experience is that like usually my role was always valued, and I was always in teams that had a designer that valued our work and had our input in consideration. But I know that doesn't happen everywhere, right? So I know there are teams that don't even have a designer. Like you mentioned, that there are projects that are out there that came up really, really bad. So, and that I think that we are getting more attention because of that, because we can see the difference when something has a designer's work in it. We can see the difference in the product, of course. So, and I think that's becoming like very visible in Web3 products.
I totally agree with Joanna. I believe that design is being more valued nowadays. And especially in Web3, I believe people are realizing that we need design. So we need to be able to have better experiences in order to, for a mass adoption to really happen. We need to have simpler interfaces to allow more people to use our products and services. We need to think about accessibility and inclusion. And that's all fields that a designer can tackle, right? So we need designers to be able to work alongside a very diverse team. We need designers to work alongside PMs, such as we do. We need designers to work alongside engineers and to work alongside other people in a diverse team. So I totally agree that design is being more valued nowadays. And as a final question, as we're approaching the end of this episode, I would just like to ask you, how do you two navigate the uncertainty that sometimes, well, that can be very present in some projects, especially in Web3 projects? How do you navigate that uncertainty? How do you go through it and guide your product to go through it as well? And how do you, as non-technical product managers, understand what the technology is capable of doing, or what we're capable of doing with that technology, especially being such an early stage and a technology that is evolving so fast every day? How do you understand what's possible or not to build?
Ideally, you are working with someone that understands it and is there to help you and guide you. So, yeah, it's a challenging, but is it any more challenge than any other technical stuff that you will have to learn in any other product? I think it just brings, well, I understand the blockchain technology is really complex, but it's also complex because technology-wise, it's at the start, right? So we are discovering a lot of new things constantly. So that also adds to the complexity. But, I mean, wouldn't you rather? I throw the question back to you. Would you rather work in an existing, fully tested technology where everything was already set in stone and done and copy-pasted, or actually discover and do user research and tackle problems, and not even Google has this answer?
Does ChatGPT do?
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, I mean, AI, another great example of something fresh, new. In my perspective, yeah, it's challenging, but it does require its investment of time and energy to study and learn. But it's part of the experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd say it's the same. So I remember that the same way that I was always non-technical, right? So I came from law school. And first I started by thinking, okay, the law says you can do this in this way. How does this translate to tech? Then when I moved to the retail bank and I was responsible for the whole product and design system and the digital transformation, what happened was I just went to the lead architect, architect or engineer, and I told him, listen, I need you to actually sit down with me like twice a week for 2 months and explain to me how all of this works, because I feel that sometimes I want to do like, I want to have like three screens and this requires 7 APIs. So I need to know how this works. And then I moved to Web3 and it's like, boom. Everything you knew, you now know nothing. Like Jon Snow, all the way. So, I mean, I learned all the basics, and I think you need to have like all the basics down in your heart and in your mind all the time. And it takes a while. It really does take a while because it's so new and it's so complex. And you think, okay, this was written by people who have PhDs in physics. How am I gonna get it? But then we have people like Napsh, for instance, one of our developers, who I could just go to him and say, what the hell are ZK rollups? Please explain. And he does this TLDR version where I can actually, and he is knowledgeable enough about product to actually like explain the minutiae of how this can affect. And I think we're so privileged in this company, to be honest, because we have designers, product managers, and developers that are all very aware of the pains of each other's jobs. And we try to communicate in the most effective way for that technicality and that difficulty and complexity that we feel very often is translated into very simple terms and that apply to the language that you speak as a product manager or as a product designer. And that's such a rich experience, to be honest, because that's also part of our work, right? Later on, we're going to have to pass that on to clients, and we're going to have to turn requirements into features, and we're going to have to translate this into simple terms. So having people around us that support us in that tech-wise is just fundamental and such an incredible experience to learn, to be honest.
Naps actually explained to me in a very sunny day, we were sitting outside, I remember really well, we were sitting outside and he explained to me what zero knowledge proofs were in like 2 minutes maximum in very simple terms. Is amazing.
Naps explained to me a concept of a wheeled farm that compounds financial strategies using apples and pears at the office.
Yeah. I love his analogies.
Yeah, so good. So good.
Thank you very much, Margarida and Álvaro. It was great having you here for the second episode of Can I Have It in Blue? You were actually our first guests, so that's really, really important. We couldn't have started in a better way, I believe. It was really interesting hearing you talking about products, about your role as product managers, about the collaboration between product managers and designers. Thanks for accepting our invitation. I hope it was interesting to everyone listening to us. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back very soon, so stay tuned.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.